And now is as good a time as any, I guess. Welcome, listeners, to Tales Over Tales podcast. It's Jordan.
And Abigail.
Hi, I miss you.
I know. I haven't seen your face in a very long time.
It's been a minute.
Uh-huh.
It's been a minute. And if you're wondering if we're missing anybody, listeners, sadly, Alicia was not able to make it with us today. But we are going to do our best to bring the conversation full circle for you.
Absolutely. I mean, like, for a good reason. The girl got married.
We did. It was so lovely. Alicia got married this last week. I got to be there with my husband. It was a beautiful week in San Diego to go get married. And yeah, girl is doing the dang thing. Now she's a whole wife. She's still a grad student. So we were surprised, but also not so surprised when she was like, I might not be able to do this. But we love you, Alicia, and we share in this time, in this space together in your honor. So before we get into highs and lows, should we go ahead and share with listeners what we're drinking?
Yes, definitely. You want to go?
Yeah, so we did a poll, listeners, if you remember, and believe it or not, y'all voted half the way. So we decided originally, if all three of us had been together, we would have had each drink represented, but we have two of the three. The three options were sangria, whiskey and coke, and a cider spritz, right? An apple cider spritz. So I have got a delicious, yummy sangria homemade by our cocktail consultant, my wonderful husband, Marco. It has pineapple, strawberries, blueberries, a little bit of orange in there. It's really tasty. What about you, miss? What are you drinking?
Nice. The apple cider spritz. So it's hard apple cider with club soda. And so you're supposed to put a bitter in there, but I couldn't find the one that they had specifically, like for the recipe, they had specifically said to use. So I just put honey, to be honest. I was like, let me just make it a little sweet. So I put honey on the side, and on the rim is cinnamon and sugar. Really sweet, and then the apple cider. I like the contrast, and then I try to make it fancy, so I put like three apple slices in here and some thyme sprigs. I'm like, let me make it look cute.
There you go. There
Let's
you go. Well, cheers. Cheers.
Cheers. Yes. Boom.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into highs and lows. Since the last time listeners heard from you, Abigail, it's been a minute. How are you doing?
I'm good. So I'm all moved into my apartment. I think when the last time I was on here, I was packing, actually.
You were unpacking. You had just moved into your place.
Oh yes, that's true. I had just moved in and I was using the clubhouse. That's true. So I am unpacked now. I'm settled in. Now it's starting to feel really homey. So that's been really nice. I wasn't here last month because I also started teaching. So I was doing my college professor thing. So I taught a college level course for 7 weeks, and that was really awesome and a great experience. It was my first time teaching, and I really enjoyed working with the students. There were some cons because some of those students, I'm like, you drive me a little crazy, but for the
What's your
most part, I'm gonna tell them the name. The first ones, I have a list. But they were, for the most part, it was a great opportunity and experience to get to teach and connect with students on that level. Because I'm
Are you
a
going to be doing that again next semester?
I'm thinking about it. I'm heavily considering because I enjoyed it so much. I know it's going to be so different each semester because I'm going to get, just a really different set of students each time. So my students for this past semester, they were mainly fresh out of high school. So everyone took that. I taught an 8 a.m. class, so that was like one of the biggest cons to it. And I'm like, 8 o'clock in the morning. But I try to be peppy. You know how much I'm a morning person I am. So
Oh yeah,
it
she's jolly sunshine in the mornings, listeners. 100%.
Yeah, I am not. So I had to hype myself up the whole 30-minute drive to work. I'm like, okay, like, I know they wouldn't want to be here at 8 a.m. and I don't like to be awake at this this early, but like, let me just make the content interesting so they feel like they're leaving with something. So that was great, but wasn't what, well, you know, another con was the final project was three parts and I had 20 students. So I had to grade 60 papers. And so that took me like a good minute to grade. I didn't have a life for like that week. So that was nice.
I know that because you like never got back to me.
Girl, I was like,
listen, she did not return phone calls. She did not return text messages. I'm just lucky over here. I got here on the podcast. Okay.
I was like, after I was done, I was like, I'm going to just sleep a lot. And that's what I did. I slept a lot, but I also read. So which we're going to talk about today, but yeah, that was pretty much like highs and lows. I think it was all intertwined.
Okay.
Hey, what about you?
Oh my gosh. Highs and lows. I'll start with the lows because I always appreciate ending on a high note. October in general has just been a really challenging month, mostly schedule-wise. My husband and I have found ourselves just super overworked, really packed, busy schedules, and it hasn't always allowed for the time that we selfishly would like to have, I think, between him starting grad school just a couple months ago and both of us working full time. And we're also very heavily involved in our ministry, as I've shared here on the podcast before. So that has been a huge damper, I would say, in the month and has made it pretty challenging. But we are hopeful and looking forward to hopefully a slower pace with the holidays approaching. So thankful to see October go. Listen, it's one of my favorite months. I'm not going to lie. October is wonderful, but looking forward to the holidays, looking forward to nicer weather. It's gotten really, really beautiful and really nice out, which I am super encouraged by. So I would say that's been the lows. I'm going to go with Alicia's wedding. It just was really, really nice. It was a beautiful, small, intimate ceremony on the beach. Mostly just her family and his family. I think that there were really only like 20 of us, maybe 30 of us. There wasn't a whole lot of people. So it was really, really nice. And it was a good way for Marco and I to go into the holiday season with kind of a reset, if you will. So we spent an extra day at our Airbnb and had a little bit of a morning at the beach, and it was good. So,
Sounds nice.
Thanks. Yeah, it was good. Definitely grateful. But what I am not grateful for is many things in this book. So listeners, this is just going to be a lot like ripping off a Band-Aid. I have to apologize in advance. So as you know, listener, we covered Verity by Colleen Hoover. And why don't we go ahead and Abigail, do you want to get into the plot summary before we kind of share our initial thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. Verity is a classic tale that teaches readers things may never be just as they seem. When we first meet our main character, Loan Ashley, she is a struggling writer that can barely make ends meet. Her mother has recently passed away and she has eviction notices taped to her door. It appears her luck is running out, yet fate has a way of intervening. Enter Jeremy Crawford, husband of famous thriller author Verity Crawford. He comes out of thin air with the offer of a lifetime. Loan is offered the job of finishing Verity's very popular series, which Verity is apparently too injured to finish herself. Loan finds herself in the middle of a very twisted world, riddled with tragedy, a love triangle, and a mysterious manuscript. With every chapter, we are left wondering, will she make it out unscathed?
Okay.
Yeah.
So, listen, you're going to get a completely unfiltered conversation here because Abigail and I really didn't even unpack a whole lot before we started recording. So, ma'am, initial thoughts. Go right ahead. Lay them on me.
There's so many initial thoughts that I have, but I think that, so this is just full disclosure, this is actually my first Colleen Hoover book. Okay. I've never read.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Will it be your last?
Will it be my last? I don't think so, because I've heard so many good things that I'm not gonna let this one book dissuade me. So I'm kind of getting into the fact that I had a lot of issues with the storyline in general. I just noticed, like, for me personally, there were just quite a few plot holes, things that were too convenient or didn't feel like they connected well for me. But overall, I liked the development of the main character. I like getting to learn about her. I don't think she grew in any way, but I just like learning, getting to like having things unfold more and more about her. Okay. She seems like a super relatable, struggling artist type. So,
yes. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's my initial thoughts. But what about you? Tell me some of your initial thoughts from there.
Okay. Let me take a sip first.
Let me join you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I should let you in, listener, to give you a little background. This is not my first Colleen Hoover. I have read It Ends With Us, which is her other super popular book, Becoming a Movie. Excuse me. I have not read It Starts With Us yet, which is the sequel. I know, that's really confusing. It starts with It Ends With Us, and it ends with It Starts With Us. But I promise it all makes sense. Those of you that are Coho big fans, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I own a few other Colleen Hoover books as well. So this was the second one that I've read.
Okay.
I was deeply disturbed.
Okay.
Those are my initial thoughts. Mm-hmm. It's not that I was not a fan. Was I hooked? Yes. Was the writing extremely compelling? Yes. The trajectory of this book, though, is absolutely wild. And I'm just going to come right out and say it. We'll get into the other kind of side of it in a little bit here. I could have done without some of the softcore porn. Mm-hmm. I wasn't about it. Mm-hmm. I'm all for spicy. Okay. Closed door romance, open door romance. I don't mind. Okay. Mm-hmm. Especially when these characters are lovable. They are enchanting. Mm-hmm. They connect you to them and you get to relate to them.
Yeah.
I didn't know who to trust or who to believe in this story. Mm-hmm. I had a really hard time finding any redeeming quality in any of the characters.
Mm.
Also, when you're talking about biting into your bed frame,
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna be real with you. I know how much a bed frame costs. My husband and I love to keep things interesting in the bedroom. I'm not biting my door. I'm not biting my bed frame.
Mm-mm.
It was just weird. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was just thinking the whole time. I was like, she got some strong teeth. Because I know my teeth
hurt. How does that not hurt? Would that hurt your teeth? I've got a couple cavities that I've got to go get filled this week already. Like, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not biting into a bed frame.
No, that was a lot.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It was a little much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That was a lot. On the same page. Hey, Chihuahua. Anyway, and this is the beauty to me that is Colleen Hoover, right? Mm-hmm. She absolutely sucks you in. Mm-hmm. And here was a little bit of background. I told Abigail before we started recording, I would share with her a little bit of background research I found out and have heard from Colleen Hoover. I listened to her interview on Ellen Hildebrand's podcast, Book, Speech, and Beyond. Oh my gosh, it was a great interview. But also looking at Colleen Hoover's Wikipedia page, she was a social worker. She studied social work.
Mm.
And being in your line of work of all people, I thought Abigail's going to find that super interesting for this story.
Yes. Okay. That, because I have a lot of things about, I have a few things about mental health that I wrote in my notes too. So
yes. And we'll get to that in a moment. So she was a social worker and this book self-published.
Hmm.
This one was actually originally self-published.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So anyway, that's neither here nor there. Getting back into the book, here's one thing that I could relate to. Loewen, our main character, is very aimless in life, right? She gives me that impression. She's not really sure of her own value. She has really low self-esteem, low self-worth, lacks a lot of motivation and confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So at the start of the book, did Jeremy seem just too wholesome, just too likable to you?
I never liked Jeremy from the moment.
You did not. You
said yeah, that. I did not. So I, you know how like I got the feeling that he was fake. Like he wasn't genuine. That was my first impression. He was like, the reason I, well, one of my first impressions, not the very first one, but then when he met her again in the elevator, that's it, in the elevator, and he pretended like they weren't going to the same meeting. That was weird. And then he like Googled her and I'm like, but you know who she is.
Okay. No. So listen, we covered this book in my local book club as well this last month, right? And mm-hmm. did I tell you in our book club discussion here when I got together with the women to discuss? So mm-hmm. listener, if you haven't read this book, at the very, very beginning of this book, Jeremy and Loewen end up connecting because they witness a man being hit by a car mm-hmm. on a New York City busy street, whatever, blah, blah, blah. One of the women in my book club, she made such an interesting point. She goes, part of me was wondering if, did Jeremy have anything to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if he like pushed this guy in front of the car or like maybe he didn't have anything to do with it at all. Yeah. But I thought that was a super interesting theory.
Yeah, no, honestly, that is kind of what I thought. Because I'm in my mind after I realized, after we find out that Jeremy does know who Loewen is, I'm like, how did that happen? You know, what are the chances they're both going super early to the same meeting? And like, so, you know, this book, the thing I did enjoy, it really teeters on the line of like fate and like are things by design. Like it really has like, well, is this fate or was this design? It has you kind of questioning that a lot. And so that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, was it fate that they were supposed to meet in that way, in that moment? And was it by design or was it a little bit of both? Maybe he saw her after the guy went into the street and he was like, oh, like that's her. Let me get her away from everybody to kind of see who she is. That's why I get confused about, because I'm like, like you can play it either way. It was fate or he designed it. So yeah.
Isn't that so interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah, I initially Jeremy was pretty likable to me. Of mm-hmm. course, I had that sense or that feeling of like, no, he's really too good to be true. I can't with this guy. You're saying you didn't like him from the jump. I just, it was hard to nail him down and to determine mm-hmm. how I really felt about him until closer to the end. So anyway, so listener, Loan obviously ends up accepting the offer and she moves into Verity and Jeremy's home. They live in Maine, is that right?
I believe Maine. Or was it Vermont? I think it was Vermont, actually. Was it
Maine or Vermont? I can't remember.
But one of them.
She ends up moving into Jeremy and Verity's home. They have their son. Oh, my gosh.
Crew.
Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, little Crew, five-year-old Crew. Oh, my goodness. Crew is... He's a little creepy, but yeah, I think he's gone through some stuff. I want to talk about the mental health side of things for that for a moment.
Yes.
I think Crew suffers from PTSD.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, no matter if the circumstances to what he witnessed, and we're going to get to in a moment, were by design or accident, witnessing that as a small child, like you're going to know that, and you're going to have this idea of the fact that your siblings are gone. And like, I think he suffers from PTSD and he's lonely because it also feels like Jeremy is kind of isolating him a bit. Cause I didn't hear anything about school or friends, or maybe there was something about school.
I think he still goes to school.
Okay.
But you are right in that there's no language or how to deal with the passing of your super young sibling that you were close to.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so basically, so just to give context, listeners, what happened was that a few months, I believe it was a few months or maybe a few months to a year prior, Verity and Jeremy originally had three children, and the older two were twins, and it was, you know, kind of
Arthur
local.
And, oh, shoot, what was the other name?
I think Chasten, I think it was.
Yeah, Chasten.
Mm-hmm, yes, and so I believe Chasten passed away first. And from a peanut allergic reaction. And then 6 months later, Harper passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so we learn later on that Crew witnesses Harper's drowning. And so, you know, that's why we bring up the PTSD piece. But I think, yeah, Crew's very lonely. I think he is experiencing symptoms of PTSD. And you know, there are just kind of little things that happen throughout the series, or throughout the book that kind of makes me like kind of feeds into that for me. But he's super cute. And I think that he takes to Loan pretty quickly. I think he ends up shy because he's initially shy because he's a five-year-old and five-year-olds can be shy. But then once he realizes like, oh, okay, this lady is cool and she's a part of our lives, you know, he warms up to her. But the thing about Crew is that he is the first person Loan meets, second Crawford that Loan meets. And I take issue just to rewind a little bit about the fact that Jeremy invited Loan to stay at their family home to be able to look through things. So that it kind of leaves the question of fate or design again. You know, is it like, was it like fate for, you know, for him to offer it, or was it by design that he wanted her there? And she basically has no choice because of her eviction notices. She had to move out of her, vacate her last apartment, is waiting for the funds to fall, come through for writing Verity's books, the advances to come in so she can afford her next apartment. So she's in between places and she broke. So that's another thing that makes it relatable, like just kind of like the please let this fall through and this happen. So she has no choice but to go there. But, you know, I feel like Jeremy could have, even if he couldn't make heads or tails of anything, he could have packed up everything and shipped it to, you know, the publisher.
Yeah. And listener, to provide even another layer of context onto that, Verity, after this accident that she's had, which has rendered her paralyzed and incapable of being able to finish this really popular series that she was in the middle of writing, mm-hmm. she's living in the home. Mm-hmm. Like, she's still there. So I'm gonna be honest right now, as the woman of my own home, mm-hmm. yeah, no, that's not something I would be comfortable with under any stretch of the imagination. So mm-hmm. I'm with you. And I like your take on the whole fate or design. Mm-hmm. I think there is absolutely a theme of that, it seems like, throughout this story. Mm-hmm. Kind of getting into, we'll get into a little bit more mental health stuff in a moment, because I'd like to hear your thoughts on all of them, Jeremy, Lowen, and Verity. And so we'll get to that yeah. mental health aspect in a moment too. Mm-hmm. One aspect of the book as well, though, that super creeped me out. So listener, Lowen suffers apparently very terribly from sleepwalking. Okay. I know nobody that struggles with this issue. Did you find it at all concerning as well, the moment Jeremy suggests putting a lock on the outside of her bedroom door that she's staying in?
Yes, I definitely did.
No, mm-mm, absolutely yeah. not. No, thank you.
For me, it was like, I think this is why I've never trusted him. So I always had an air of suspicion with him. I think he was testing to see if she trusted him.
Sure.
Because it's a way of trust. Like, if you're willing to have someone lock you in a room and then unlock you in the morning, like, that takes a lot of trust, like, because you don't know what's going to, like, you know, if they'll forget or if, you know, they'll, you know, they intend to keep you in that room. Like, all these things come up. And so I thought that was weird. But let's, like, go back a little bit, is that, you know, I don't know anyone that sleepwalks either, but I've heard definitely a lot of stories about people sleepwalking and doing things that may be outside of the norm for them, and waking up in places and not sure. And, you know, it can be a very scary thing to wake up and not know what you've done or where you've been.
And that's valid. I'm not saying that part of it to me is concerning or creeps me out at all. Mm-hmm. None of that, right? Yes. Like, you have to take those things into consideration, sure. And listener, there is a part in the book, you know, Lowen kind of shares a little bit with Jeremy that there was this instance that happened when she was younger, and it really changed the way, especially that her mom connected with her. It negatively impacted her relationship with her mother. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, I think that is where so many of the insecurities, so many of just the, I don't know if you have anything else to weigh in on in terms of the mental health aspect of it, but that was very, just in the same way, I'll bring it back to your reference to crew potentially suffering from PTSD. Those types of situations, those issues do shape you. Mm-hmm. As a human being. And mm-hmm. we learn Lowen went through something pretty formative as it relates to her sleepwalking.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not trying. Yeah, I'm with you. And I'm not trying to diminish any of that at all.
No, I was just going to say that, like, I think that they went overboard with the fear, but I think it was intentional, because the mental health aspect between the relationship between her and her mother, I think that if her mother had responded differently, then she wouldn't feel the fear associated with, you know, with her sleepwalking. I think it was definitely her mother's response. So just to rewind a little bit, so when this occurrence happened for Lowen, her mom started looking at her very differently and even moved rooms farther away from her, farther away from Lowen. And so for Lowen, like, you know, even though her mom didn't say anything, the nonverbal communication that was relayed was that I'm dangerous. So I have to stay away from other people. And so I think that's why she's so detached from other people. And it's hard for her to make these deep connections, and the insecurities and all these fears come because she worries that if I get too close, then I can hurt these people, the people that I care about, where I'm trying to form connections with. And so, you know, here she comes into the Crawford home feeling that insecurity, that fear, to an extent, and just having that overall worry of like, am I going to be a potential like threat? Like, is it going to be safe for me to be here? And I think that's why they exaggerate her sleepwalking. One, I think it's like the fear that she fears and that feels, and that we sometimes feel, so, like I know I felt like a little bit during the sleepwalking, like kind of her explaining that was just a reflection of her own fear. It wasn't like this is a dangerous thing. It was just a reflection of what she was feeling, the panic she was feeling in those moments.
I would agree. I think that makes a lot of sense. Did you feel like Jeremy and Lowen's relationship progressed really, really fast, like too fast?
I feel that's one of those fate or design things. I think that, you know, I think it progressed really quickly. It went from them meeting and her living in the house, basically, because she was essentially there for a few weeks, to like their relationship eventually getting sexual. And in the matter of a few weeks, it's just like, okay, was it by like fate they were supposed to meet and connect in this way, or was it truly by design? But yeah, I think it did progress really quickly. I would agree with that.
That to me, and again, Verity is still living there. Like, your wife is in the house.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my God. How did you, okay. I think we should talk a little bit about the manuscript. And I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that.
Okay. Should we have started this podcast by letting listeners know, obviously, there are going to be spoilers? I think that can just be assumed. If you've been a consistent listener of ours, we're going to be covering some stuff. So, listener, for context, again, Lowen is attempting to help finish this series that Verity, as an author, has been writing. Mm-hmm. But rather than focusing on research for this series, she comes across Verity's manuscript, which it's a manuscript that's supposed to be quote unquote autobiographical, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of memoir-esque style kind of a thing. That's where I was deeply, deeply disturbed.
Mm.
As a person that struggles with codependency, as a person that struggles with idolization, whether that's idolizing my husband, whether that's idolizing our relationship, our marriage as a whole, or it's idolizing anything in general, it was concerning to me. Mm-hmm. Major ick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because listen, if you haven't read this, it's disturbing. She tries to abort her children after she's pregnant with a hanger.
Mm-hmm.
Who in their right mind does this? So now, unpacking mental health corner, mental health time with Dr. Abigail, please.
As I take a swig of my drink. Yes, yes, yes. I'm a professional.
Charles, Abigail, Verity Crawford walks onto your couch in your office. What do you do?
After she's told me everything that has been in that manuscript, I would seriously consider having her like put into an inpatient program where she's going to be like behind some walls securely, and really get into the root of her, of who she is, because I mean, there's little hints of Verity. We don't learn a lot about Verity outside of the manuscript. What we do know about her is that her parents stopped talking to her after she wrote her first book, because they didn't like the themes of the book, because they found it disturbing. And they told her, they gave her ultimatum, either stop writing these books or that they will not speak to her again. And so she chose to keep writing. And just her personality, you could tell from the manuscript, like when we first meet her, she has a very rebellious like personality in terms of like the dress she was wearing. She stole it. The event that she met Jeremy at, her intention was to sleep with someone rich, and to, you know, take them home, probably take advantage of them. And like, I think her intention was to have someone become obsessed with her. And then it ended up happening that she became obsessed with Jeremy. Mm-hmm. And so the roles got switched with that. But yeah, her being on my couch, I would say that she, you know, I think she suffers from a lot of, you know, maybe mental health issues that she's never really sat down and had a moment to process through some of the things, because her parents stopping no longer talking to her, that's a big thing. Like, I try to put myself in her shoes. Like, if my parents stopped talking to me, I think it would have a big, I know it would have a big mental health impact. And so for her, it was a big impact. And then going to the point of codependency at the same time, like that relationship was ending. Her and Jeremy were engaged and she found out she was pregnant. Like, her, you know, she had something else to hold on to. And so maybe she didn't process it as hard. So yeah, so just from that perspective, her behaviors, especially the ones laid out, especially the part when she was, she tried to abort her children. That was, I felt sick and disturbed as well. And there was another point later on where we found out that she tried to harm one of her children. And like, you know, from what she shared in the manuscript, and that disturbed me.
She wouldn't breastfeed. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't nurse or breastfeed. She tries to kill one of them. Like, it's all like, okay.
Yeah.
I guess let's talk about this for a second too. There is an element, or there is an aspect, many people, right? They do find writing therapeutic. Mm-hmm. They do find writing constructive.
Mm-hmm.
And I will give Loen the benefit of the doubt as she comes across and she's reading this manuscript of Verity. I see her kind of wrestling with that idea, right? Mm-hmm. She wants things to get better. She's mm-hmm. reading from Verity's point of view and she's going, I want to understand. I want to give this person the benefit of the doubt. And at the same time, just like you said, this person needs help.
Yes.
Absolutely. So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the thing I was going to say is that I was curious that if Loen, because like another theme that comes into play is perception. I'm wondering if Loen never read this, her Verity's manuscript, how would her perception of Verity have changed? Because as she continued to read, she started like getting mean to Verity. There was a scene where she like said some very hateful things to Verity, you know, because Verity, so something that they, that Verity's nurse does is that she brings her into different rooms of the house. So Jeremy and crew have breakfast with Verity at the table, and then the Verity's nurse feeds her. And then we'll watch TV in the living room. And so there was one scene where Loen and Verity were alone on the first floor together, and Loen said some pretty like nasty things to Verity, to her face. You know, calling her like a bitch and saying all these things about her, and like, you know, just, yeah, it was just really, really surprising. And I'm like, wow, her perception of Verity was solely based on that manuscript. And I think that once she started reading that manuscript, things, like, she started perceiving things very differently. Like, she started perceiving that she was the enemy, instead of like her initial role to come in there was to help and to like help the family and, you know, progress the story. And then, you know, slowly started to warp in her mind to, I'm not wanted here, you know, for a lot of different reasons. So yeah, so I think it was perception played a very big role. And so, like, you know, for you, like, where do you, like, what are some things you noticed about like the perceptions too? Because you mentioned that too.
Yeah, same. I thought it was very interesting. I thought it was very weird. I didn't like that scene where she was nasty and mm-hmm. ugly to Verity. Mm-hmm. Here's the other thing. That happened after she made out with Verity's husband, mm-hmm. right in front of Verity's face, mind mm-hmm. you. And okay, I get it. Loan literally thought that she was losing her mind. Mm-hmm. And not only did she think that she was losing her mind, listener, we'll start to kind of slowly get into the ending here in just a little bit, but Verity had been faking these injuries, right? They really were not actually she wasn't faking her injuries. She was healing, mm-hmm. but she was not as incapacitated as everybody originally thought.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. I get it. There's a little bit of gaslighting in there, mm-hmm. a bit, right? Like, let's also talk about the fact, what did Loan take? Was she Prozac for mm-hmm. anxiety or Xanax? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is mood, that alters your mood, right? That also kind of impacts your mental state. Mm-hmm. So if she could have just gotten what she needed in terms of the material to mm-hmm. help Verity finish these books, rather than fixating on the manuscript that had nothing to do with these books, mm-hmm. yeah, obviously we'd have a super different story, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely, so, but I don't think it would be as compelling as it is.
Probably not. Mm-hmm. Probably not. Yeah. And to go back to the fate or design for a moment, I'm with you. I think Jeremy picked Loan. Well, and he mm-hmm. says as much. I think there is that scene towards the end when he tells Loan that he had read her previous work mm-hmm. and he knew she was the right person for the job, right? Mm-hmm. Even going back to the beginning of the book with that initial meeting, and he like asks the publishing executives and the lawyers to leave for a moment. And he tells Loan, ask for this. Here are the concessions that you can make because we want you for this. I mm-hmm. want you for this kind of a thing. So, and it was never talked about, but there were a few of those points in time. She kept waiting for the advance to clear.
Mm-hmm.
She kept waiting for her money to come in so that she could leave. Did mm-hmm. you think Jeremy had something to do with that? Because I totally thought Jeremy had something to do with that.
Yeah, because it was supposed to come in 2 weeks. And she was there for like over a month. If we, you know, kind of look at the timeline, but yeah, I agree. I think Jeremy had something to do with that. Like, absolutely. I think he kept pushing it back, you know, or
we never found out.
Yeah.
We never found out.
And the thing about Jeremy is, and the thing that unsettles me about Jeremy is that the manuscript, you know, whether it's truth or not, was written from Verity's perspective. We don't right. know the role Jeremy played in the marriage. Like, we don't know if he was like also manipulative. Or any of these things. We don't know. There's a lot we actually do not know about Jeremy. We learn about Lowen, we learn about Verity, but we do not learn about Jeremy. He's just a sexualized figure that like comes in every so often and knows what to say or how to make people feel. So yeah, so that's another reason I didn't trust him. And you know, I'm not getting all the talking about not having all the information and being like fate or design. Like, yeah, I agree. I think there was a lot he did to design like Lowen being there. And he wasn't a stand-up guy. Like this whole time, one's like, oh, you know, he's so great. He's key, you know, he's not gonna make any advances because he's still married. And I know he's still married and he probably feels so lonely and guilty. And then we find out he's been like, he like slept with someone, you know, at some point, and who knows how many women, other women he's been sleeping with while Verity has been, you know, healing. But yeah, the fact that her injuries were real initially, but not to the severity that, you know, that was portrayed. I don't know. I don't know how much of a spoiler I want to go into, but I will say that with modern science, it would be hard to fake a lot of the things that she said that we learned that she fakes.
Okay, but did Stockholm Syndrome come to your mind at all, though?
Yes. I was like, why'd she come back? Why'd she come? She needs to run. So, like, all these things, yeah.
If that manuscript was not real, I'm taking my kids and I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Yep.
So, I don't know, from that mental health perspective, bringing that back in, let's go back to Mental Health Corner with Dr. Abigail for a moment here. Like, I thought quite a bit about Stockholm Syndrome with this book.
I can see. So listeners, just really quickly, like what Jordan and I are talking about is that there was this letter. We're not going to disclose so much of the letter because, you know, read it and to really get that full context of it. But the gist of it was that Verity was trying to confirm that or trying to say that the contents of her manuscript weren't real. It was an exercise from her publisher, her editor, that they encouraged her to do to write things from like the villain's perspective. Because the thing about her series and the thing forgot to mention in the beginning is her entire series is from the villain's point of view. And so I guess like, you know, there was a point she met with an editor and the editor gave her, like said, quote unquote, said, oh, you should write, you know, try these exercises. But like, you know, it's still hard. Like what is, you know, like which one to believe? Because if you think about it from like the title, like the name Verity, it means truth. So trying to figure out, like, no one knows what's the truth? Like we were left open-ended.
Do you think that there's any substantive results from an exercise like that? Like, I know that this was not an exercise she was given by a therapist, right? This was an exercise that was simply just encouraged to her by her editor, her publisher, the connections that she had made in the writing world. I had to wonder if there was any weight to it.
I would say there has to be. Because I even think about like stories I've heard of actors who've done really dark roles and had to get into their character and the fear they felt when it was hard to come out of that. When it was hard to come out of that thinking, like on the line of thinking. So I would say that, yeah, there's a huge impact from having that perspective. Like even one of the manuscript entries was literally maybe a few days after her daughter, the other twin drowned. I said, how do you, as you're grieving, still engage in this exercise? You know, as you're grieving, you think like, if you're like, I think about grief, and a lot of people, like, you know, grief is very, you know, I think it's a very individualistic thing. Everyone experiences grief very differently, and the impact of grief is different for everybody. And so I say this very loosely as that, how do you write from this villainous perspective after witnessing, you know, the loss of your child? And maybe in some way that helped her process, but from my perspective, that was strange. And there was just, there was just so many question marks. And also, you gotta be like a little bit of a little bit crazy to fake being paralyzed and like fake being a vegetable. Like, that's weird. Like, that's the point. Like, I was like, so she had
Crew knew his mom wasn't actually as paralyzed or as incapacitated as she was letting on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there is a part of me, I'm inclined to believe that. So listener, like in her letter at the very, very end of the book, Verity writes, and Loewen finds this letter. Does she like rip it up or like put it away? I can't remember
exactly. She puts it back where she found it.
She just puts it back. But Verity talks about like her focus being healing up, giving it a period of time, and then she was ready to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Like she wanted to leave. And Jeremy and Loewen killed her. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Let's just talk about that spoiler for a second.
Yeah, didn't hesitate. He was like, he looked at her and said, what do I do? And she did not hesitate to give him advice. She could have been like, wait, let's hear her out. Like, wait, let's turn her into the police. You know, there could have been a lot of sound decisions to make, but she was like, you got to make it look like an accident. So,
And I understand coming from such an emotional place that you are incapable mm-hmm. of making very logical or sound decisions. And listen, we're just going to be completely transparent here on the podcast, listener. Abigail is my ride or die.
Mm.
I know she's my ride or die. So is Alicia. You are the two I'm calling to help me hide the body.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? There are no bodies. No bodies, no crime. That's all I'm saying.
But there ain't no body, ain't no witness. So y'all go mind your business.
Oh, really, though? You are absolutely right. But the reason you and Alicia are my ride or dies, you would have a lick of sense in that space.
Yes.
I'm like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Like a moment of like clarity, but there was no moment of clarity. It happened so quickly. I actually had to read that part over. I was like, did I just read what I think?
Description was very weird. The description was very weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so with that. Yeah. Verity. Verity dies at the end. As long as we're doing spoilers, let's go all the way. What's your call it? Loewen gets pregnant with Jeremy's baby. They're moving and starting a whole new life and a whole new family somewhere. And I'm like, girl.
You feared for her? Did you end the book concerned for Loewen, basically?
No, because I think if Jeremy's crazy, then Loewen is crazy with him. So
that's fair. Yeah. No, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he's like, oh, she matches my crazy. So why not? The ending was,
I told the women in my book club, so I was the only one in my local book club here that had previously read a Colleen Hoover before Verity.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, so it's really funny and really interesting to hear you say, no, I would read more.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were so many of the women in my book club. I was like, okay, oh, this is your first Colleen Hoover? I won't be surprised if it's your last. I'm really, really sorry, because this is a tough introduction to Colleen Hoover. Mm-hmm. Somebody tells me they want to get into Colleen Hoover, I'm all for it. I love you, Colleen Hoover.
Yes.
You stuck me in and you hook me into a book like nobody else I have known. And yes, that is why I will keep reading.
Mm-hmm.
But there were quite a few of the women in my local book club, this is why I share this, that said, this was my first and my last.
Yeah. You know, and I think that if her reputation wasn't what it was now, it would be my last. Because the reason, like, I was willing to, like, read this book is because my younger sister, Biggie, she loves Colleen Hoover. For, like, a whole, like, 3 months, this woman had a chokehold on her life. Every week, she was getting a new Colleen Hoover book delivered to the house via Amazon. And I'm like, girl, like, it's enough. And she's like, no, you don't understand, Colleen Hoover. Like, she has a chokehold, you know what I mean? And, you know, and I trust her opinion. So for me, I'm like, okay, since I learned that this was something early on, since you gave me that information and this was self-published, that gave me the insight, like, saying, like, no, she's evolved as a writer.
She absolutely has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I would definitely give her another shot and read another Colleen Hoover book.
Well, and listener, I mentioned Colleen Hoover's interview on Ellen Hildebrand's podcast, Book, Speech, and Beyond. That gave me a lot more insight into who Colleen Hoover is as well. She's a super humble, hardworking individual, mm-hmm. and I can respect anybody worth their salt. Like, she literally, Abigail, one of the stories that she tells, because she hasn't self-published every book, obviously. Mm-hmm. She now has publishers that she works with.
Yeah.
But she was working as a social worker. Her husband also has a job. They've got kids. She has a book or two that she decides to self-publish. She shares the story on the podcast, and maybe I'll link the interview in our show notes.
Mm-hmm.
But she shares the first time she got a check self-publishing, and it was like $50. She shared how excited her and her husband were they could use that to pay a bill. You know what I mean? Like, this was not one of those things where, and she shares, she's like, I always wanted to be a writer, but literally I got that first $50 check and I thought, oh, this is going to be my life. I'm going to be a social worker. I'm mm-hmm. going to continue my day job. And this is something fun I can do on the side.
Yeah. And now look at her.
Not no more.
Yeah. Girl, that's your full-time job now. So.
And listen, if I had as much talent as this, shoot.
Absolutely. No, I'll give it this, because I know that we've made a lot of, like, points about the book, but her writing style, it really is. Well, I really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It definitely pulls me in. And I think that's what kept me reading, was the way she, like, kept me wanting more. Like, you know, her character was desiring more, and that reflected in me, where I was like, oh, I want to know. Like, she's wanting to know more. I want to know more too. And just her overall writing style and her ability to tell a story. I think that that's what, you know, that really hooked me in for this book.
Can I read a line real quick?
Mm-hmm.
I hear the crack of his skull before the spattering of blood reaches me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the opening line.
Exactly.
And I will never forget, we talked about it when I had my book club meeting earlier this month. Mm-hmm. And one of the women in my book club that's also a writer, she was like, that's hands down the best opening line I've ever read.
Yep, definitely.
Right there. And that tells you
everything you know about her writing. And so, so I enjoyed her writing style, and I enjoyed the imagery and the way she described certain scenes and how you felt that the emotions that character was feeling in the moment. Felt the panic, in the scene where Jeremy and Loewen are making out, and then Loewen spots Verity at the top of the stairs, like the panic. I was like, ooh. I felt that a little bit, that just is a testament to how good of a writer she is. So yeah, I can't have that be the last book I read from Colleen Hoover.
It's haunting.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of author she is. She's enchanting and she's haunting at the same time in such a beautiful way.
Mm.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yes.
Wow. Well, fun times, and just in time for spooky season. So we're talking about this, listener, and this episode will drop tomorrow, the day before Halloween. We're recording on Sunday. Halloween is Tuesday. Do you have any fun plans for Halloween?
No, I'm going to be in my house eating candy on my couch.
You heard it here first. She doesn't give out the candy, y'all. She doesn't share.
No. If you knock on my door, I'm going to ignore it. I stand by that. Mark my words, when we meet again next month, you're gonna ask how was Halloween. I'm like, I heard a couple of knocks and I kept eating my candy on my couch.
I can't with you. Anyway, listener, if you're looking for a fall read or something for spooky season, did I tell you? My book club was originally going to read this for Christmas. We were originally going to read this in December.
Mm-hmm.
I am the one that suggested that. I was like, listen, I haven't read this book. I don't know a lot about it, but I know enough to know this might not be a Christmas season book.
Spooky season is perfect.
Thing, all of us, like, as we sat down to the restaurant, the first thing we're talking about, everybody was like, oh yeah, no, thank you. Like, yes.
But it really brought on the Christmas cheer.
No, definitely not. Anyway. Ay, ay, ay. All right, well, so you heard it here. Do not go to Miss Charles's apartment for Halloween.
No.
But okay, let's get into our next segment, the film and TV or movie segment. I was really interested by some of your picks here, so share.
Okay, so for Verity, I would pick, I don't know how to pronounce her name, but I'm going to say Rosamund. Pike. She was Jane in Pride and Prejudice, like the one with Keira Knightley. And if you watch the Wheel of Time, she is one of the main characters in there too.
And
she's also in Gone Girl. Yes, definitely. Uh-huh. And so I really enjoy her acting. Like, she's a really great actress. I think that she'd play the role of Verity very well. Like, if I think about, like, if this was turned into a movie segment and the manuscripts were turned into flashbacks, I can see her playing this role very well. So I like her a lot. And then for Loewen, I actually chose Emilia Clarke. Our Khaleesi, but she's been in a few other roles as well. And I think that she, like, her personality in general, I think she's a very humble personality.
She's pretty versatile.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And her, like, I agree. Like, she has a lot of range. She's versatile. And I think she would play this role very well. And then my last person for Jeremy, I would say Oscar Isaac. And I would say Oscar Isaac because I do enjoy looking at him. So,
I do so
yeah, I do enjoy looking at him.
He's not bad,
right? And I feel like he played like for me dad very well. And I would fall for him. I'd be like, oh my goodness. If he was Jeremy, I'd be like, poor Jeremy.
Oh, gosh.
So that was, those are my picks, but I liked your picks too. So tell us about your picks.
Okay. So you might not remember this, but the movie that I was actually thinking of quite a bit, do you remember? I'm going to look up the year that it came out. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. But so listener, I was thinking of Alicia Silverstone, believe mm-hmm. it or not. Have you ever seen The Crush?
I have not, no.
Okay, so it's from 1993. Mm-hmm. And you know Carrie Elwes. Mm-hmm. Carrie Elwes from Princess Bride and Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Mm-hmm.
He's an actor, wonderful actor. So he stars in this movie with Alicia Silverstone. Mm-hmm. Alicia Silverstone is this teenager. And Carrie Elwes moves in next door, or like he rents a room from her parents, something like that. I can't remember. But yeah, she becomes absolutely obsessed with him. Mm-hmm. It's one of those kinds of stories. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, it's such a good film. But I was thinking about that. So I thought of Alicia Silverstone for Verity, believe it or not.
Okay.
And I thought of... It's really funny you said Emilia Clarke for Loewen. I didn't write this down, but then you said Rosamund Pike too, and that did make me think of Keira Knightley for mm-hmm. Loewen. To be completely honest, I could totally see that one too. Mm-hmm. And this is probably just the Gilmore Girls lover in me. I thought of Jared Padalecki for Jeremy. Mm-hmm. I really did. Like, I don't know. He's got one of those Dean vibes. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like good and he's cool. He's wholesome until he's not.
Yes. You know? I can see that. Mm-hmm.
So that's, and then the other one I did think of was Ryan Reynolds, because mm-hmm. he is also somebody super versatile. And I feel like he could do a lot
mm-hmm.
in this role.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay.
I don't know if I want to see this made into a movie, though. I guess that's another question we can talk about. would you watch it?
I don't know, because I think they would focus, because, like, you know, sex sells. So I think they will focus more on those scenes than anything else. Yeah. And I think it will take away from the storyline that's there.
I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. I would agree. So, I don't know. But that's what we got for you, listener.
Yes.
That was Verity by Colleen Hoover.
Yep.
Oof, what a doozy. We hope that you read along with us. We hope you enjoyed. If you had other thoughts, other feelings, we would absolutely love to hear from you. So please share your thoughts. I look forward to reading more Colleen Hoover, of course. I will have more Coho in my life. I don't know if we'll cover her again on the podcast. We've talked about that in the past, whether or not, I guess not, just when we do a repeat author, who would it be? And what would that look like, kind of a thing? Because we haven't done it yet. Okay. I am super excited for our November pick, though. Do you want to do a drum roll for me and I'll announce it?
Okay, hold on. It might not be on beat, but...
Okay. We are reading Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson.
Yes.
I absolutely adore this book. Up the top, I'm going to let y'all know that I do love this book. And it is a Hulu series that's also dropping in the month of November. So is it Hulu?
Yes, Hulu. Yep.
And how fitting that we would choose this book for November, the same month it's dropping mm-hmm. on Hulu, and the same month of Thanksgiving. Y'all, yeah, there are some fantastic descriptions of food in this book. Mm. I'm so excited to dive into this one. So hopefully all three of us will be able to gather together again mm-hmm. to cover this one. And I think you're going to love it. Do you have your copy yet?
Yes, I do. Sitting right next to my bed.
Okay. What else are you reading these days?
I just finished The Vanishing Point. And then there was one other book I had read before that, but for some reason I'm drawing a blank. I don't know why. I have been reading, but The Vanishing Point, I like that. I enjoyed the story. I think it was very compelling. And I don't know why I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden on what the other book was, but yeah, that's what I've been reading. Just kind of taking it slow in between like classes and doing therapy and stuff like that.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. Oh my gosh. Well, that'll be super, super exciting. Mm-hmm. I look forward to unpacking this book because it's just so beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a really great book. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. So much more fun than Verity.
Yes.
For obvious reasons.
We're looking forward to it.
Not that
we were calling Hoover.
We do. Not that we were not looking forward to Verity, but I just, this book literally kept me up. I couldn't sleep.
Hmm.
That's how disturbing it was.
Wrong.
Anyway, until next time, listener, please rate, review. Like we've said before, we love to hear from you. You can find us on Instagram. We are Tales Over Tales. And you can email us. We have an email address. That's talesovertalespod@gmail.com. You can find me on Instagram at Miss Jordan Alexis.
And then you can find me on Instagram as the Charles in Charge.
Whoop, 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 whoop. And then until next time, my friend, stay reading.
Stay classy.
And stay
drinking.
All right, I'm going to go finish this.
Yes. I love another.
Another, please. Another. Bye.
Bye.
I love you.
Love you too.